I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
The wait is finally over, and sport is back on Now TV.
It's lights out and away we go!
Where you can watch Sky Sports, Premier Sports and BT Sport together and all without a contract.
What a fantastic part.
So whether there's a day, week or whole month of action you just can't miss, you can now stream the lot.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is your sport on your terms. Search Now TV Sports to find out more. 18 plus content streamed via internet. Full terms apply.
Hi, Grace. So here we are in Milbank Studios,
yeah,
which is where lots of the political journalists hang around. And at the moment, as we're into a general election period, they're going to become quite high profile. And we've got one such on the programme today, have we not?
We do, we do. Well, the general election is in how many weeks now?
Well, it's December the 12th, so it's six weeks.
Six weeks. Yeah. And at the moment, there's a big debate going on about whether or not Jo Swinson is going to be on the leadership debate.
Well, ITV have said it's Johnson against Corbyn. Sky have said...
What do you think about that?
I've got to be honest, I think there's something a bit ridiculous about Jo Swinson going around saying she can be the Prime Minister. She's got 15 seats. That being said...
But that being said,
Nick Clegg
2010,
did, yeah,
Nick
I agree.
Clegg, when it was all the like hypermania
yeah.
about
But I
Nick
also
Clegg.
Think if you're going to have them, you've got to find a way for having Nicola Sturgeon and probably Nigel Farage to some extent. So maybe whether you do them with two-hour debates where you have head-to-head for 1 hour and bring the others on for another hour, I don't know.
What's Sky saying?
Sky want to do three-way.
Okay.
Swinson... Corbyn,
Johnson.
But I, you know, listen, I had this when we were in, around back in the 90s and through the time we were in power. There's so much energy gets wasted on these debates about debates. But I do think on this, I don't know whether she's right that it's a sexist thing. I think it's just the two big parties, as it were, basically saying, listen, we're the only two that can actually form a government, so therefore let's keep it to that.
But they're never going to form a government. Either of them are, really. So
well, Tories might.
Do you think? Do you think there's much chance of that? Because actually, if you think about it, Jo Swinson will be quite important because she, if there is going to have to be a coalition, it will most likely be with her.
But she's come out already and said that she's never going to prop up a Corbyn government.
But anyway, Nick Clegg said he'd never have a coalition with the Tories.
That's true, so. That's true. I guess people do say
people
stuff like
bullshit.
That. I do think the Clegg thing is a sort of fact, and it's true that there were more seats back then. But I think that if you had Clegg in those debates back then, I think it's a bit odd to exclude Jo Swinson, I must admit.
But so the person that we're interviewing today, so we're at Sky in Milbank. Yeah.
So people immediately think it's Adam Bolton, we're going to have a fight.
God, and you're going to have a physical fight, and that's why you've got your boxing gloves on, and we're actually in a ring.
Yeah.
No, that could be a future guest. We'll think about doing that. But we're interviewing his counterpart, really. They've been at Sky...
She's been at Sky from the start, I think.
Really? But they
Pretty
have
much.
Both been at Sky for a very long,
long time,
haven't they?
Long time.
And she's just taken on her own breakfast show, which she hopes will be competing with...
Dan Walker, the most successful, and Naga Munchetti. They're the most talked about breakfast presenters, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
What's that other guy? There's another guy on ITV.
I think his name is...
Peter Morgan. Peter Morgan.
No, he's the one who makes the crown.
Oh, he's the crown. It's something like that. Peter Morgan and
Piers
Peter Reid.
Morgan.
Peter Reid. No, Susanna
Piers
Reid.
Morgan.
Piers Morgan, that's it.
But, so the person we're interviewing today is not Piers Morgan,
no.
Thank God.
No.
We will be interviewing...
Kay Burley!
So, Kay, what time did you wake up this morning?
As you know, Grace, I've just started my new breakfast show. I went to bed about 9 and then I woke up at 10, half past 10, midnight, about half past 1. So, and I eventually woke up. The alarm was set for 4 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
That's not bad.
Mm.
4 o'clock. So that's now, that's now your life?
It is my life, yeah. It's the, my third
Monday
time.
To Thursday.
Monday to Thursday. It's my third time at doing breakfast telly. I did it in the 1980s. And then when my son was about 4 or 5, so in the mid-90s. And here I am again.
Do you think you've got that in you naturally? Because, like, if I woke up at 4 in the morning, maybe this is because I'm not young, I don't have an excuse anymore, I would be so grumpy and I don't think I'd have the energy to sort of, like, interview and concentrate. And do you think you've just got that in you, or was it something you had
to
learn?
I'm an early bird, absolutely, right. more than a late riser, a night owl. But my son rather elegantly put it when he said, 4 o'clock in the morning is a time of champions. Either you're just waking up or you're just coming in.
But that's it. You know, whenever I do breakfast telly as a guest, as it were, particularly ITV, I find that sort of relentless chirpiness and everybody sort of pretending that everything's great and everybody's happy. And I mean, I'm talking about behind the scenes where you've got circus acts going on and all. It just does my head, and I just want to get there, do the interview, get out. But you have to sort of pretend to be happy and chirpy.
Yeah. Or are you happy?
Well, as I said, I'm more of an early bird. My first boss was a guy called Bruce Gyngell, who was the first ever person on Australian television. And he used to say, breakfast telly is like an eternal summer. You have just got to be happy and chirpy because people who are tuning in are looking to you to potentially brighten their day. Our programme's a little bit different. It's never been done like this before. It has on the radio. We're like the Today programme on the telly. So it's much harder, much more politics-based.
Who do you see as your rivals? Who are you trying to take viewers and listeners
from?
Well,
I'm from Wigan, and so we have no peer. Ha ha. Thank you. I think everybody's a rival, and yet everybody's total friendship based as well.
No, but who do you want? You want to build.
I'm just going to tell you how everybody sent me lovely messages on Twitter.
Well, that's fine, fantastic. But you know, are you taking people from peers on GMB? Are you taking people from Dan Walker and Louise Minchin on Breakfast Telly? Are you taking people from the Today programme, which you've already mentioned once?
Yes, I would say in response to that, I would hope that everybody would have a listen and then hopefully quite a few of them would stay. I do think that Piers has been the bad boy of Brexit and breakfast television for too long. And so...
Are you going to be a bad girl?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can't be as bad as him, because if you do that, you're overstepping quite a few marks if you do that.
What I don't do is, obviously, we have to stay the right side of Ofcom at all times.
Why does he not?
Because it's a current affairs programme rather than a news programme.
Oh, interesting.
And different rules apply.
That's so interesting. I never knew that.
Wow, but do you worry that Piers is actually kind of part of the sort of foxization of British television? Would you worry about that?
He's a brilliant journalist. I think he's a really, really good journalist. I think his questions are excellent. I think he talks over Susanna a bit too much sometimes.
And his guests.
And certainly his guests. But, you know, he gets to the nub of the subject. And I think he's like a flipping laser beam. He goes straight for it. And he doesn't let them off the hook. And that's a sign of a good journalist.
Right. But he does tend to use it as a vehicle for his own opinions rather than trying to get the guests' opinions out.
He does both, I think.
How much are we going to know about? Are we going to know any more about your political opinions?
None. No, absolutely not. People think that they know that I'm a Tory. People think that they know I'm a Labour supporter. I don't really get the allegations of being a Lib Dem. I'm a snowflake sometimes. So I upset everybody. So it means that I'm probably doing my job right.
Are you sure about that?
Well, do you know what my politics are?
No, but this thing about, it's like the BBC always say, if you complain about them, well, if we get the left complaining, the right complaining, we must be doing something right. I'm not saying you're doing anything right or wrong. I'm just saying that I think that's quite an easy excuse for broadcasters to make.
So what's another way? I mean, what could I do differently?
Because otherwise you've got the Piers version, which is that he's actually too biased.
No, I agree. I think you do do a good job. But I worry about broadcasting generally, that it's and I think Piers is a big part of this. I think we are moving much more to a kind of Fox News style.
I mean, obviously people make that allegation against Sky News, but I don't think that it has much foundation. I think that we have to be completely balanced, because if not, Ofcom would come down on us like a ton of bricks, and ultimately they
but
could take
that,
our
again,
licence
coming
off
back
us
to the news affair versus current affairs, can Piers be more biased?
Yes, he can offer his view
show
much more.
Right.
Yeah. easier than we can. And actually, when you write a Sky Views, as we call it, which is on our skynews.com website, you can offer your political view then, as long as you say that it's your view, clues in the title. But you can't do it on the telly.
And have you ever done that?
No.
No.
No, because for me, and I'm not criticising other people that do it, but I think for me, if you do show your view or political bias or whatever, on whatever format, then that can always be held against you.
God, it's so impressive that you can manage to do that.
Well, it's, you know, I've been doing it a long time.
How much do you think so you were born in Wigan.
Mm. In 1960.
Yeah, and you started a local paper.
I did.
Now, how much do you think that's helped you?
Oh, hugely. Mm. Hugely. I think if you want to be a journalist, I think that for me, the traditional route is still the best. You know, I did a 6-month training program where I did law and public administration and English and
shorthand.
110 words a minute.
I did 130.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Do you still use it?
T-line. I use it a little bit when I'm writing my diary.
Yeah. Oh, do you? Mm. Yeah, mine's T-line as well.
I do not know what you guys are talking about.
Okay. It means that, you know, if somebody's chatting now, I could still write a T-line shorthand. And hopefully read it back. Not always. But the smaller you write the symbols, the easier it is to read.
And did you find when you were local... I mean, the thing I found is Fiona, Grace's mum and I, we kind of met on local papers. And the thing I found on the Tavistock Times was that if you got something wrong... You literally, it wasn't that they phoned up, they came in. They came into the office and sort of wanted to see you. And it was an incredible discipline.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas now they just lambast you on Twitter, you know. And I when I first started, I used to type the chemist's opening times. That was my job. And I used to have 2 pieces of carbon, 3 copies, one for me, one for the spike, one for the subs. And then I developed further into covering vegetable shows. And then after that, I was a junior reporter once I'd got my exams and I got my NCTJ, National Council for the Training of Journalists.
Yeah.
And I was sent out to an old lady's house and she hadn't taken a washing in for 2 days and the neighbours had rung and obviously the senior reporters were not going to go and do that. So I was sent and I got there, the police were just arriving and it was a double murder.
Oh my God.
And by the time I'd gone to the phone box to ring the desk, because obviously there were no mobile phones then, and I come back, the national press had descended.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was your first big story.
That was my first big story. And to credit my editor, it didn't take me off the story. He put another more senior journalist on, but I still got the byline as well as him on the front page. Yeah.
Our first big one was the Penley lifeboat disaster.
Oh, was it? Mm. Wow. Do you remember that?
No, you won't remember
that. No, it was before I was born.
Mm. So, and you mentioned that now people take to social media. Does that stuff get you at all?
No. Doesn't bother me in the slightest. I embrace it.
But what about the way that journalism has changed because of social media? Because I can't imagine that the way that you guys came up as journalists is the same now for people my age.
No.
Because it's much easier for people to just build a profile
online.
Citizen
journalism, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people who call themselves journalists, like Tommy Robinson.
Yeah.
And people like that who quite fundamentally are not. I'm not being particularly protective of that job title, but I do think that the work that your father and I have done is very different.
Is a journalist meant to be impartial? What do you think? Is that why I'm talking to my dad now? Is that why you were maybe not as good a journalist as Kay, maybe, because you were always very biased to the Labour Party?
Well, no, I think I was a good... When I was training as a journalist, I was a proper journalist. I think when I got into political journalism, I became... I saw my journalism as part of my politics. Yeah. And I think there's a place for that.
Yeah.
But I think I think you've got to be open about that. What I can't stand are the papers like the Daily Mail who pretend that they're kind of objective when actually they're political players as well as, you know, political spectators. I was an open, avowed pro-Labour journalist.
Yeah. Worked on the Mirror. I first interviewed your dad 30 years ago.
Mm. But I think that that sort of sense of being biased is okay if it's kind of admitted. I think television is different because, you know, there are rules that govern it in a way that newspapers aren't.
Mm, that's exactly right.
Mm. Yeah. What about the stuff? I mean, you talked about the first time you interviewed. One of the recent times you interviewed me was during one of the Brexit kerfuffles out on the College Green. And it was when all that burly, you're a slag stuff was starting. Mm-hmm. Now, that must have got to you a bit.
Doesn't bother me, honestly. I can honestly put my hand on my heart.
I was rather enjoying it because it's normally me that gets the abuse out there.
Doesn't bother me in the slightest. I'm bothered if my family or my close friends say, oh, you overstepped the mark there, or that was inappropriate, or whatever.
Feel scared at all when that's going on?
No. I'm a street fighter from Wigan. Doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Does it bother you that maybe, like, Adam Bolton wouldn't get the same kinds of abuse?
I think he does. I think he does get
do
the
they
same.
They call him a slag?
No, but
that's
they,
quite
they,
gendered.
Yeah, but they call him other offensive terms, which, you know, we don't necessarily need to repeat here. But, yeah, I think being journalists now means that unless we are agreeing with whatever your view is, particularly on Brexit, then it leaves us open for criticism.
But what was interesting about that period was that it was you, it was Laura Koonsberg, it was Anna Soubry, it was women who were getting way more abuse, I felt, than men. There's an element. There was a lot of misogyny attached to it.
I think there can be, and I think there certainly can be on Twitter as well. And I think sometimes those keyboard warriors say things to me that they wouldn't dream of saying to Adam. Let's make the comparison with Adam. Mm. But I think that I am not impacted by that criticism. Some of my younger female colleagues, and probably male colleagues as well, may well take it to heart. And I would just say to them, I would take them to one side, take them for a glass of wine and say, you know, these people are faceless keyboard warriors. They're in their 50s. They've got no hair. They're drinking White Stripe and waiting for their mum to call them up for their tea. I really wouldn't worry about
them. And do you think that came with you just being in this game for a while?
I think so, yeah. Grace, yeah.
You've got a thicker skin.
I think you have to have a thick skin to be a journalist.
But surely it wasn't as intense when you were younger as now.
It was just
social media.
Different. It was, as your dad said, you know, people would come in and knock on the door and complain at the local paper. And then when I first started,
they wouldn't come in and say you're a lying scumbag. They'd say you spelt my name wrong.
But I think we're angrier now as a nation.
But how much of that is driven by the media?
I think it's driven by Brexit.
But the anger's been around for a long time. Brexit maybe has been partly caused
maybe
by
it's
the anger.
Well, I don't know what chicken or egg. I'm not really sure. What I do know is that when I first started, there was criticism, but in a different form. And then you would get the sort of green pen brigade that would write to you, usually from HM prison or whatever. And that letter would take a week to get to you. And then you'd moved on to another story by now. Because of social media, it's much more immediate. Mm. And also because of apps like the Sky News app, where you can watch the output live. When people are on the green, they can see their live on the telly, and so they go for it.
Just before we leave misogyny, on a scale of 1 to 10, how big a feminist are you?
I hope that I'm a strong 9, and I'd aim for a 10.
OK. So
what makes the 1-point knockoff?
Because I'm not sure that I always fly the flag as much as I should, and sometimes I need to check myself, and I think that's probably because of the way I've come up through journalism and I've accepted the way I was treated in misogynistic newsrooms in the past. And so I try, and the pendulum has swung too far the other way on occasion, and now I think we're just trying to get it back into the centre. So,
and when you say you've accepted that, is that like you haven't sort of confronted it until years later and then you've been like, maybe that wasn't?
I felt like I've had to accept it because I wouldn't have got on. But I'm very happy to bang the drum now. And if I see inappropriate behaviour to young women or men in the newsroom, then I'll always call it out.
What's the worst thing you've seen in your life?
Oh, I mean, I have seen women who have accepted blatant misogyny in order to further their careers. Have I done that myself? I hope I haven't, but I think that, hand on heart, I probably might have done. I've had blokes who have hit on me, and I've not called it out when potentially I should have done. But if they ever touched me, that was when it went too far. And I remember a guy stroking his finger down my back at a party, and I turned around and I said, if you do that again, mate, I'm going to punch your effing lights out.
A colleague?
Yeah.
Have you watched the Loudest Voice, Roger Ailes?
Oh, no, it's on my planner, but I haven't. Yeah.
What do you think of? Oh, here's one for you. Murdoch, force for good or force for bad in the world?
He's always been a brilliant advocate for me. He's always been hugely supportive. He's never had any influence on what our news agenda is at Sky. I work for him for. I don't work for him anymore. I've worked for him for more than 30 years. And he was always hugely supportive of me as a journalist and as a female journalist.
Roger Ailes, force for good or force for bad?
I've never worked with him. I've met him a couple of times. I don't think that you can... I mean, obviously, I can see why you mentioned them both in the same breath, but I don't think there's any comparison.
Do you want to explain who Roger Ailes is? Because I only actually found out who he was last week.
Roger Ailes, who was essentially the driver of Fox News and its political agenda, and also, I think, fair to say, if the loudest voice is to be believed, somebody of fairly dubious personal morals as well.
He... didn't always, well, if it's to be believed, he's not with us anymore, so, you know.
Right.
But to be, if it's to be believed, his behaviour was unacceptable.
Towards women. Yeah.
But he was massively, he made Fox News a massive success.
Do you think we'd have Trump as president without Fox News?
Great question. I mean, he's a very good salesman, isn't he? A snake oil salesman, some might say. I think it's certainly...
Ailes or Trump?
Trump. Well, Ailes is not with us anymore, but you shouldn't speak ill of the dead. But I think that it certainly helped.
Does that worry you?
I don't have a political view on the president, but I'll be going over to cover the election next year.
And on that as well, you'd be, as it were, you couldn't, in the way that Fox News can, you couldn't be biased in favour of one candidate or another.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And how did you feel about the whole Murdoch empire and News International during the phone hacking scandal?
We covered it. I remember being at a supper party and there were about, I don't know, 12, 14, 16 people. Quite a few of them felt that they had been caught up in phone hacking. And one of the lawyers said to me, oh, you know, do you think that you've been hacked, Kay? Because how would you feel about that? And I said, darling, I'd be devastated if I hadn't been.
It's probably not true, though.
Well, I don't know.
Do you think you are?
No idea. No idea. But, you know, I always used to change the PIN code on my phone, obviously. I mean, why would you leave it at 0000?
When you can have 1234. Yeah.
Or your birthday or whatever.
Yeah. But it was a bad... I mean, that was a bad period for the whole...
Yeah,
I mean,
and he was... Rupert Murdoch was devastated. I mean, he went to see...
Do you think he really was?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think he's a good man.
Do you think anything's changed as a result of phone hacking?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think that they certainly took it on the chin, News International. I think that some of the other newspapers were not without guilt.
For sure.
And I do think that Rupert, when he realised the extent of what had happened, was devastated. And some of my great friends lost their jobs as a result, including the magnificent Les Hinton.
Some went to jail.
Some did go to jail, yeah.
Have you watched Succession?
Yes!
It's just,
I love it!
So good.
Fuck off!
He's saying this all the time. It's so good.
Yeah, I can't imagine who it's based on.
It's impossible to work out, is it? Media mogul, three children.
Yeah, two boys and a girl.
Dad not quite sure who's going to take over. Manipulative wives in and out of the scene.
Yeah, I don't know who it's based on. Could be there.
Brian Cox is a ledge, though.
He's really good in it. Yeah. I mean, this second series has just been unbelievable.
Yeah, I think it's spectacular.
It really is.
I wasn't sure about the chap,
but it's also interesting that it's a Sky programme.
At Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
Volvo.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I love that Volvo sponsored Sky.
But it's interesting because you're obviously sort of somebody who feels quite fondly towards Murdoch himself.
Let's call him Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch.
Thank you.
No, he's a phenomenon. The same as, well, OK, we'll call him Rupert Murdoch as long as nobody ever calls Boris Johnson.
I don't call him Boris.
Well, a lot of people on telly do, as you know, and they should be picked up on it all the time. But anyway, so Rupert Murdoch,
yes.
You feel quite fondly disposed to him. But, but it's perfectly obvious that Succession is... sort of trying to play into that sense of the Murdoch myth, if you like.
Yeah, it is. And I think that when you say Murdoch, it's like a dirty word, isn't it, for a lot of people?
No, it's a nice name. It's a good Scottish name.
In the United Kingdom. And because they think about, you know, strike breaking with the Times newspapers and bringing down, is it Sogat? I think it was Sogat, the union, and some of his newspapers and their political agendas. But if it hadn't been for Sky, you know, when I joined Sky, there were only four channels in the United Kingdom. Now you've got like 300, 400, 500 plus.
Way too many. Way
no,
too
not
many.
Not enough. I love it.
Way too many.
Yeah, so I think...
No, but I think if you're on the left, if you're on the left, you do sort of feel very strongly about... We were talking outside
especially
about Neil Kinnock.
Brexit.
No, not just Brexit, but, you know, the way that the Murdoch papers just decide, you know, Neil Kinnock, Michael Foote, Corbyn now. Now, I'm not Corbyn's biggest fan, but you can't pretend that the newspapers take the same kind of fair-minded attitude that you that
but they
you
don't
have
need
at Sky.
To.
And, that's
you
true, know, that's but I'm just asking whether you think that's good for our culture.
Well, I would say in response to that, that my father was a trade unionist, and that's the home that I was brought up in. And as I said, you don't know what my politics are now. And I think that people should read a broad stream of newspapers and take their news from TV and goodness knows what else, and then make up their own minds. You don't have to be dictated
to. I think the problem is that we don't have like the Murdochs of the left, basically. There isn't like an alternative apart from the Mirror.
What's his face? I can't remember the guy, the Mirror guy. I've forgotten his name. The one who threw himself off the back of the boat.
Maxwell?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was youngster guy. I think Grace is talking about now.
Yeah, I mean,
since then, there hasn't been, but there used to be.
So it just feels sort of very heavily impartial in that sense of what we've got.
Yeah, but if you take your news from there, but of course there's lots of websites and, you know, HuffPost.
Do you think Fox News is fair and balanced?
No. But it doesn't pretend to be.
It does. That used to be a slogan.
Well, maybe it's not so much anymore. Shep Smith's just stepped down, hasn't he? You know when you said that you wanted the aircon turned off? How glad are you that you said that? No,
yeah, but we have
like
the perfect sound care. You know about that.
It's so hot. I know.
Now, listen, tell me about... you mentioned your dad there. So what sort of childhood did you have?
Fantastic. My parents loved each other with all their hearts. They were both factory workers. We lived with... My granddad used to be a miner. We lived with him in our council house in Wigan. My sister as well, so the five of us. And then my granddad had a stroke when I was 16, but we didn't have a separate bedroom for him. So his bed used to be in the sitting room. And then when it was bedtime, because he couldn't walk or talk or do anything for himself, and you sometimes go back to being a child when it depends which part of the brain it affects. So we used to have to switch the light off like you would with a baby until he fell asleep, and then we could put the light back on and watch the telly. Aww. So we were a very close family in that regard. And then when I started as a journalist, my dad realised that, you know, he was smarter than just working in a factory. And so he went to Ruskin College at Oxford.
That's where my grandma Oxford, went. Yeah. And my grandma met my grandpa there.
Is that
as well.
Right?
They did the same thing.
And then he was a lecturer in industrial relations and trade union studies.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that had been sort of inspired by what you were doing.
Yeah, he just realised that, you know, he wanted to do more with his
There was
life.
No journalism in the family before you?
No. No, I just used to like writing stories when I was a little girl. And then I did a 2-week job creation course while I was at school.
Did you feel northern?
Yeah.
Did you think you were going to be a sort of political journalist?
No.
That wasn't intentional.
No, and I don't really think that I am. I think I'm an all-round journalist. It's just that my career at the moment has alighted on me being a politics journalist, because that's the story.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can get very excited about royal babies.
Love Island.
You do get excited about royal babies. Do you remember, one of my memories of you is how, and I couldn't work out whether this was you being a human being or utterly ruthless, do you remember when you cried on me?
Yeah, I do, yeah. It was a bit of both.
Explain.
Was it 1997 election? I think we were in Rottenstall.
We were in Rottenstall, yeah.
And you wanted to interview...
I wanted to do an interview...
With Tony Blair?
With Tony Blair. And I was outside and...
What year was this, sorry?
97.
Okay.
And I was... No, it was after that.
No, it was the election campaign.
Yeah, but it was the one after that.
Was it 2001, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had wanted to interview Tony Blair, and they were inside, and all the favoured journalists for your dad were all inside, and I was frustrated, and I was outside, and I really wanted to get the interview, and I was so frustrated, I didn't know what to do about it, and so I rang my partner, and I said, who you knew very well, George Pascoe Watson, who was the deputy political editor at the Sun at the time, and I said, and the next thing I knew, well, I was still on the phone to him.
He phoned me up and said, she's really, really upset. I went out, and she was in tears. Oh, God.
Hey, it worked.
Did it work?
Yeah.
And you got it?
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, and he said, you can have 5 minutes. So after about seven, he dug me in my ribs. So that was enough.
Now, could a man have done that?
No, but then men have
their own tactics that are similar to that.
And also, you might not have left him outside.
I didn't leave you outside. You were there. You'd parked yourself on a little balcony. I remember
it. You'd invited lots of others in.
I don't know how many men there were. Can't remember.
How many men were...
I can't remember. There was BBC. I think we had done Sky in the Morning was the other thing.
Oh, do you see?
So it wasn't a personal
thing. Don't like being on the back foot, does he?
Yeah, we'll have to look up the diaries. If it's not in the diaries, it didn't happen. Yeah, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was manipulative and womanly. Wiles. Fair enough. Do you think... So you were born in 1960.
Yeah.
So you're almost 60.
I am.
Do you think you would...
And I've just signed a new five-year contract.
Have you?
Yeah.
So you're going to be here until you're 65?
At least, yeah.
Unless it becomes like football and they kick you out whenever you feel like it, just give you a great big payoff.
Well, they haven't done that so far.
But it's quite hard. It's a lot harder for women to stay in the game for a long, long time.
It is. Certainly this side of the pond. When people ask me that, I always say, very different the other side. Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, you know, Katie Couric are all of that. Obviously, Barbara Walters, Doyen, in her 80s. Katie Couric, my sort of age. Diane Sawyer, older than me.
Have any of them not had facelifts?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Do you have to have a facelift to keep in the game?
No, you don't. But if you... I've not had my facelift, too. I've had a lower facelift, and then I had my brow lifted when I was in my 40s. Will I have another one? Heading off that question, who knows? I'm never saying
never.
Has
Piers Morgan had a facelift?
No, but...
Do you know that?
Well, I think he has.
Okay, well, I don't know. But I think
if you
do...
He's got a fake tan.
He definitely wears a ton of fake tan.
Yeah, well,
obviously
that,
he does.
Yeah, on the telly, though, you do tend to be bleached out quite quickly. And I would only say, if you have something done with your face... Just admit to it.
Yes, totally.
Because, you know, Mother Nature doesn't do that. You know, you don't look as good as people like, I was going to say me, but I'm not going to say
Go on, blow your own trumpet.
Say it, go on. You look good.
Yeah, thank you.
You do
like
look very
Diane
good.
Sawyer, you know, you can't look that good.
But what do you feel about sort of the fact that we do know that in TV, men seem to get older gracefully more often, and women just get younger and they just get
sacked. So that was the point I was going to make.
Adam's not had a facelift, has he?
No. That was the point I was going to make, that hopefully I am flying the flag for older women. I'm the oldest woman in news, I think, in the UK. There are other older women on other TV programmes, but not in news.
And do you want to get to, like, Diane Sawyer? Do you want to be doing that?
I don't know, but I want
80s?
To be able to do that if I can and if I want to. At the moment, I'm loving my job. You know, I feel like as sprightly as a 30-year-old, so I want to keep doing what I'm doing.
Tony quite fancied Diane Sawyer, I have to say. I think that is in the diaries.
Tony quite fancied a few people.
You? Did he fancy you?
No, he didn't fancy me.
It doesn't sound like it from that story.
No.
I think she's probably thinking of other people there, but I'm not going to even say.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. I bet you do.
Succession.
Yeah.
Ah. Sorry, that was my fault, wasn't it? We went into that terrible distraction.
Did you notice I let him off the hook there?
Yeah, you did. So you did some of those celebrity programmes.
I did.
Why did you do that?
Which ones?
So I did Dancing on Ice.
Uh-huh.
Why are you sneering? I did it because I raised the profile of Macmillan. I'd never ice skated before. I'd never been on ice before. Torval and Dean, world champions, teaching me how to ice skate. Hello. And in addition, I donate my fee, obviously, to Macmillan, but there were 10 million people watching every week, and I'm looking at Grace now, not you, because you were sneering.
I love. I'm watching Celebrity X Factor, by the way, and Martin Bashir, do you know this?
Yeah.
Do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
He's on Celebrity X Factor and he's amazing.
What does he do?
He sings. You know, he's brought out a reggae album.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, my God, I was dying yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Sorry,
anyway,
but
my point
I love
was
these
that
kind
I could
of programmes.
Mention the charity.
Yeah.
On the way
you
out.
You got a huge coverage.
And in addition, I then did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Adam Bolton.
Oh,
Eamon Holmes.
How did you? I bet you did better than my parents.
I don't even talk about it.
Didn't even get £1,000.
Did you not?
No, we did.
They got £1,000.
Okay.
We got embarrassing. We got totally
stiffed. How much did you win?
£150,000.
Oh, well done.
For Macmillan.
Great.
Yeah. So that's why I did it.
Yeah, great. I did that.
Also, you came with the sneering and you did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It just wasn't your proudest moment, was it? I re-watch it on YouTube very
Hence
often.
Hence the sneer.
Yeah.
I wasn't sneering. I just think that news people should be news people.
Well, what? Does that mean that I can't show people my other stuff?
You can,
but you're kind of...
What?
What about when I do... there?
Am I?
Yeah, because you would class yourself as like a news person or
not
a commentator.
Really. No,
you do things when it's convenient for you, like Soccer Aid. Yeah, I want to play football with Maradona.
Yeah, of course I do.
Kay wanted to do Dancing on Ice.
Yeah, okay. I'm giving you that. Okay, yeah. It's fine.
Looks down at notes.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how big a football fan are you?
Well, that's a great question. And I would say in answer to that, which is what I always say when I'm trying to think, I used to be a very big football fan when I was a little girl. and my dad was a Manchester United fan.
Right.
And Georgie Best,
Bobby Charlton, Dennis Law,
sort of vibe. Yeah. But my granddad was not. My granddad was a Liverpool fan. So he used to say, if they were playing in the back garden, I'd close the curtains, a very northern phrase. But my dad was insistent that we were Man United fans. And then when I moved to London, I didn't really have much interest in football. But I've had a child, only one boy. He's now 26. And when he was little, he used to be a huge football fan like his dad. And they were Arsenal fans. And so I was very into football 2004 season, I think it was, when they were the Invincibles 38 games without defeat. And so Seaman, Tony Adams, Lee Dixon.
Played for Burnley.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but he also played for the Arsenal. But my point was that my ex-husband was a football agent as well, so I knew a lot of these people personally, so I was really into football.
And are you still now?
Not so much, no. I mean, if
is your son still
my son? Very much, yeah. I mean, if they lose, I can't talk to him, and if they lose to Spurs, oh my goodness.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
What about rugby league though? Wiggins, you know.
I was a very big rugby league fan. I knew Dave Whelan really well, and Maurice Lindsay. Maurice Lindsay used to be the chairman of Wigan Rugby League, and so I was. But again, not so much anymore. I find that the more I've got involved with politics, the more it consumes. There's so much to read, so that you're on top of it all the time. I'm a big Formula One fan.
Are you?
Interesting.
Yeah, it's the one sport I don't get.
Do you go and watch that?
I've never been, but then I wouldn't really want to because, you know, you'd see them go past and then you wouldn't see them for another minute and a half.
Yeah, that's why I always see when people go. It's like it's on Sky.
Sky F1 is really good. You know, the sort of camera positions that they've got is amazing, and they even show, you know, how much is left on the tyres and so when they're going to have to come into pit and stuff, or box, as they say.
It is quite exciting. I used to watch that with Rory, my brother, and I did find it quite exciting. I've
been to one Grand Prix,
though.
And I didn't really...
No, it's much better watching it on the telly, I think.
Mm.
But going back to the football, just to end on the football, when Wigan played Arsenal in the FA Cup final, a semi-final at Wembley, that was really tricky.
And who did you support?
At Wigan.
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you go?
I did.
Were you in the Wigan end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
Where was your son?
I was in the Royal Box.
Because you're the Queen. Were you being the Queen?
I was in the Royal Box. And
with your son?
No, he was at the Arsenal end.
Okay.
But I had, in the programme, I wrote in support of the Wigan team. So, yeah. But
so how often do you go back north?
Well, sadly, my parents are not alive anymore, so it's just me and my sister. And she lives in Cheshire, Goulburn, which is Wigan, really.
And what sort of life has she got? What's
so she's got one son, and she's got she's married, and she's much more down to earth and northern than I am. But she loves coming down to London, so there's no point in me going there because she wants to come and she wants to do the shopping and all that sort of stuff.
Are you close?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. She's 22 months younger than me.
Oh wow, that's pretty small.
Yeah.
And so you've been, who was the father of the boy then? Was that
Alexander, my son, Steve Cutner, who was a football agent.
He still is?
Yeah. No, he's a music agent now.
Okay.
He started off in music. So Richard Ashcroft.
Yeah.
From The Verve. He represents him.
Have you watched this, side note, the Clive Davis documentary on Netflix?
No.
Oh, that's an amazing documentary. It's about Clive Davis, who's this big music agent who discovered Whitney Houston.
I see. So it's
about his career, and it's just a fascinating look into the music world and industry. But that is a massive side note.
Do you never get tired of doing the telly?
No, I love my job. I love my
job. Don't have any days where you sort of think, oh, God, here we go again.
No, I used to work on the meat counter at Asda. You know, and now I'm broadcasting to potentially 700 million people around the world.
What kind of numbers does your breakfast show get?
Don't know. We know that there was a 40. I'm looking to my amazing producer, who's nodding ahead at the moment. But we've got a new app that is on your phone, so you can scroll down and click on the app, and you can take us with you, so you can watch the Kay Burley Show wherever you are. And that had a 40% uplift today. So
that's great.
Yeah, on our first day. So
and it's
pleased.
International as well. You can watch it all over the world.
Yeah, global. Yeah.
Wow.
So when I did my afternoon show, people on the west coast of the US used to use it as their breakfast show.
Oh, amazing.
Okay. And so you've never had a day, you don't have days at all where you just come in and think, I can't be arsed talking to Marc Francois and Stella Creasy again about Brexit?
No. honestly, I can honestly put my hand on my heart and say, which I'm doing, although it's radio, you can't see it, I absolutely love my job. Seriously, I love my job. And if I didn't, you know, I've earned enough money over the years that I wouldn't have signed another 5-year contract. I love it.
I think you're going to do it into your 80s.
Well, 100.
I do.
What about becoming the first centurion?
Oh,
yeah.
News person.
I think you've got that energy.
Well, let's sit here in 40 years' time and see.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I won't be here. What about, should we do this exercise?
Oh, can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Do you remember when my dad and Adam Bolton got in there? For me, that's one of the best moments of
And they were both really
Sky
class. So for people, I'm sure most people know, but for those who don't, they got really... Tell me
what
I think!
I was calm.
I know, but
you were being sort of patronising.
I was calm.
You were
passive aggressive is what you were doing.
Yeah.
You knew what you were doing, and he took the bait. And when you've been working on an election campaign, it can be, you know, 25 working days, 6 weeks, whatever. You're absolutely on your knees by the end of it, and so you're just holding it together.
It was an amazing
And then
piece
your dad
television.
Comes along, and he's as passive aggressive as you like, and Adam just took the bait.
Yeah,
I definitely won, didn't I?
You did win.
Although he said in his book, he said that he bumped into Grace, who was taking the piss out of him, and he wrote, and Grace said, "Oh, I thought you were. It's the only time I've ever seen anybody get the better of my dad."
And I was obviously taking the piss.
And he wrote in his book as though his daughter thought I was right. Anyway, we've made it up since.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Just coming back to journalism and being a woman, do you think that it is significantly better now for women coming up?
Yes.
Compared to when you were?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what... Because do you think more still needs to be done?
Yes.
Is basically what I'm trying to
and
get
I,
at.
And I hope that I've made a small difference in that regard. I hope that youngsters, both male and female, coming up, feel that if they are being bullied or they're anxious or whatever, they can come to me and I will definitely have their corner, I hope. Yes, she's nodding. My producer's nodding. But I do try and do that, and I think it's up to me... and people like me, both men and women who have been successful, to bring up the next generation.
And also I think it's if you can't see it, you don't know that you can be it. And you're going to go into your 80s, I believe, hosting and presenting the news. And that will inspire also women of your generation
to
think
that it
doesn't end. When
I inspired
my
dad.
Yeah, exactly.
From, when I was 17.
Do you think it might have gone too far the other way now? If you think about it now, Laura Koonsberg.
You mean too many women?
Oh, here he comes.
No, I'm just...
Do you think anybody said, do you think there are too many men on the telly?
I did. Always did, to be fair. But
I think
you think about Laura Koonsberg, Katya Adler... Emily Maitlis, Beth Rigby, you...
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's
Kate
not
McCann.
Great, but I wonder now whether actually men not considered for top
jobs. Our newsroom's 50-50.
Right.
And that is on merit, which is amazing. We've still got work to do when it comes to social mobility of other classes, but, you know, we're working on that.
That is a real problem in the media.
Yeah.
And especially now that the training thing doesn't really seem to have the same hold as it used to.
Yeah.
So more and more journalists now just come out of top universities.
I completely agree with you on that.
Dad knows somebody and they go.
Yeah.
And especially for you, that must seem even more apparent because
it's
that's not what your experience
and annoying,
was.
And that's why. But my new assistant editor on this show, which I have two, and the one that is in my ear for the 2 hours, he's only 25. He was a runner 3 years ago. I saw his talent. And I asked him to come and produce the new breakfast show.
And what's his background?
Yeah. So he isn't a posh boy at all, but he worked really, really hard and he did go to Cambridge. But, you know, he got there not because of who his parents were or not because of the school he went to, but because he worked bloody hard.
Oh, like me,
Grace. Do you think, one more question I want to ask. Do you think that coming up, as a woman, I hate saying as a woman, but, you know, you were a woman in a very male world.
Still am.
Exactly. Do you think you're sometimes quite baffling to men? Because you're very sort of unapologetically just yourself and the things that men might think would bother you don't bother you. Do you think
that
confuses
men? Yeah, I think that's why I'm
a
target of criticism sometimes, because they think, I can take her down, and they can't understand why, you know, I'm...
Well, it's not working.
Yeah, your dad would know weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. You know, you can push me, but I'm still going to bounce back up again.
Do you worry that the government under Johnson appear to be following the approach of Trump, and actually Corbyn does this as well, is kind of avoid difficult interviews, rely on little clips, that because the media need them, they use them, they're all pulled, they're put out, everybody runs the same line. Their own social media output is massive. Do you not worry that actually the kind of the genuine scrutiny that the media can should be doing is they're deliberately minimising it?
Yeah, I feel I'm very annoyed that the Prime Minister doesn't come on my programme. A lot of people thought that he would have done the show today because, you know, we have a global audience. We have a massive newsroom audience. We have a massive audience.
And it's from Westminster.
And it's from Westminster. I'd been told that potentially he might, but he didn't. So that I find that massively frustrating. Also, when it was him or Jeremy Hunt and we were supposed to do a face-off between the two, he didn't do it. Jeremy Hunt came and I did an hour with him. Other prime ministers have been quite difficult to get hold of as well. I'm certainly not going to cry anymore to get an interview with a prime minister. But I am...
We always felt tough interviews were part of it.
I'm teasing.
They're avoiding them deliberately.
Yes, they are. I completely agree, but I don't know what Corbyn would be like if he was in power.
Definitely the same.
I think he'd do the same.
Yeah.
I think he'd do the same.
Yeah.
So...
And I think that politicians are servants of the public and they should... and as a result, they should be... able to put themselves in front of journalists. Mm.
And we need tough journalism as well.
Yeah, I don't want to just tickle his belly and say how funny he is and how, you know, he looks like a Labrador with his hair or whatever. Yeah.
Which politicians do you actually really like interviewing?
Well, I like interviewing all politicians. I wouldn't have thought that all politicians like being interviewed by me, but I, you know, Sadiq Khan knows he's always going to get these. The Mayor of London always knows that he's going to get a tough interview from me, but he still comes on the programme.
I love Sadiq.
Jeremy Hunt, I like interviewing him. Harriet Harman, I enjoy interviewing her. I can't necessarily.
When you say those people, sorry, I know you that we're sort of going over, but we've obviously got more and more questions. But when you say that, is that because those are politicians who don't really answer questions like politicians, you know, in the way that they actually are?
No politicians will answer a question unless you keep pressing them. I can't think of any that will answer the question if they don't want to. But they are grown-up politicians. Michael Heseltine was always the most difficult politician to answer. He had a very good technique of when you ask the first question, he would always say yes or no. And generally, when you ask your first question, you just everybody's relaxing into
to throw
the mood.
You.
Yeah, and so do it to throw you. And then you'd be thinking, oh, no, 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 don't do that. And then you'd look down for your second one and then you would be on the back foot. It was a very clever technique.
Okay, six-a-side team to change the world.
Yep.
Three men, three women, dead or alive.
Okay. Have I got three men and three women? I think I might have.
Don't worry if you haven't.
Okay, I think I've got... So I said Beth Rigby, mm-hmm. our political editor, because she is robust and she always delivers. I said my son, because he's young, he's calm, he's composed and he's considered, and you always want somebody like that on your team. I said...
What does he do?
My son, he sources supercars for people who've got too much money.
Ah.
So cars were always his passion.
So he's not saving the environment. He's saving the world, but not saving the environment.
Yeah, he's saving me having to look after him. Diana, Princess of Wales, because she would be like David Beckham. You know, everybody would want to come and watch her play. Gandhi. Because he would calm the team down if there was a little bit of hanky-panky on the pitch. Steinbeck, because he would be a good storyteller.
Okay. So would Beth.
But she's robust and always delivering. And finally, Marilyn Monroe, because she would always know how to score.
Oh, I love that. Marilyn, we've never had Marilyn.
No, although she's in my winner's book.
Is she?
Yeah, because she said something that I have pinned up on my wall.
Which is?
Thinking Ink.
Oh, yes.
Good team.
Thinking Ink. Very good team.
Yeah, I like
well, okay.
It.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell a grateful nation?
I would say that my mantra, two. I've got two, both important given what we're talking about. The first one is work hard, play hard, be kind. And the other one you'll have heard many times before, but I just want to say it, just to underline it, and this is what I believe more than anything when it comes to women in journalism. There's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women.
That was really interesting. I feel slightly like I forgot to be hard on her with the whole Murdoch thing, feeling slightly regretful.
Yeah,
about
you see,
that.
I felt I was talking too much, and I wanted you to take that part of the interview, and you just sort of.
But she, I was I so charmed.
I know,
we were in the
you
Sky
got spun
building.
Grace.
We were in. We had a nice cup of
she
tea.
She made us a cup of tea.
And I
she
sort
was
of
so
forgot.
Nice.
And you know what, Dad? It's, having just finished Succession, some part of me is like, because of Brian Cox and Succession, I'm like, well, if Rupert Murdoch's like that, I mean, it's
he's
like
okay.
The Crown and the Royal Family. It's made me love the Royal Family because I'm like, well, I love them so much. So I just finished Succession last night and I was just feeling, I can't stop thinking about Succession. And so now I'm obviously thinking, like, well, maybe...
You know Brian Cox, who does Logan Roy?
Yeah.
Rupert Murdoch.
The best character
yeah.
in
well, you know,
I
worked with him on the People's Vote campaign.
Yeah.
Before Roland
you,
Rudd...
You have mentioned
before
that
Roland
to me.
Rudd decided to sort of drop a hand grenade into it.
Yeah, for fuck's sake.
And anyway, I was speaking to him recently, and I've asked him whether... Because you know how my ringtone is really boring. It's just... I've asked him if he can get me a succession of clips of Logan Roy saying, fuck off!
Fuck off!
Fuck off!
I love
off.
that you dropped Succession in there, even though it wasn't you weren't dropping the title of the show.
What?
Well, you said I want to get a succession.
Oh,
of him
that was
saying
totally
fuck
accidental.
Off. Yeah,
yeah, but he does say. I mean, the swearing in Succession is
perfect.
Absolutely,
it's perfectly.
Done. He is a great swearer.
Really good swearer, yeah. But also
fuck
it's
off.
So funny. Like my mum, your partner, isn't really impressed, you know, by many people.
My
but
girlfriend.
The fact that you have been texting Logan Roy, mum just thinks is the coolest thing
she's
ever.
She's quite impressed with the Eric Clapton
no,
bromance.
She's so much
she
more.
Is.
But I mean, the Logan Roy, she honestly just loves him so much and thinks the fact that you email him is the coolest thing in the world. So I regret doing that, but I do think Kay is a very interesting, she's sort of a feminist from a different generation to me in that she, I think, because of like where she started out in her career and where feminism was at that time and sort of men having the amount of power that they did, she sort of doesn't see some of the things which I would pick much more of a fight with, like the harassment, you know, and we were talking about her getting online abuse and getting abuse on College Green. We had Jess last week. Jess does call it out a bit more and Kay just sort of
she
ignores
just,
it.
Yeah, she does. She does.
So
I think it was interesting because I said to Jess last week, didn't I? I think there's a different way of handling it. Like when I've had loads of abuse, I've tended just to sort of ignore it. And Kay does definitely do it. I've been with her being interviewed by at College Green and people are shouting, you know,
she's blocked it out.
War criminal to me, slag to her.
Because I think as well, you know, that is like slag. It's such a sexist insult. It's so gendered.
Yeah.
So I think, like, if that happened to me, I would take a huge amount of offence to that. But maybe, you know, she's been doing it for such a long time. She must have such a thick skin.
I think also she's got a very, very... I think she does have a strong personality.
Yeah.
I also like the way she talked very openly about things like, you know, plastic surgery and how she looks. And, you know, would she have lasted this long if she hadn't made herself look... keep on looking young, a bit younger than she is, as it were? I don't know. I don't think. Do you think Adam and Piers have plastic surgery?
Piers, definitely.
Seriously?
I mean, yeah, I really do think that.
Oh, wow. What sort?
Botox.
No.
I think that. I do think that. And then he also tops the fake tan.
Listen, can I? You know, I saw a thing of Cameron the other day. Cameron doesn't have any lines on his face.
Well, he's probably had Botox. Had more, much more people than you think have had Botox.
Wow.
It's a very minor thing to do.
Is it?
Yeah, people can just do it at home now.
Wow.
So I wouldn't be surprised, but Cameron has also always looked like a baby foreskin.
I think we should end it there.
Okay.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.